Exactly 15 years ago, I was sitting in Camille's office. Camille, are you reading this now? Does the number 15 ring a bell? 15 years, Camille. Most people would say all these years. Though you, in my dreams, talk about just 4.5 years as all these years. I was sitting in Camille's really tiny waiting room, which stretched and swelled to fit dozens of patients. A few people came for appointments they'd made weeks before, or even earlier, but most came from outside Damascus without having booked. They sat on chairs scattered around the room and spilled onto the narrow steps outside. I smoked and watched them. The secretary, Layla, who was unusually sweet, was reading some lectures she'd printed out, studying diligently for her exams. Every so often, she'd steal a glance at me and smile. Layla. She probably had things on her mind, even while she was so kind to everyone. A person can be both troubled and sweet. She was young, working her way through college, supporting her family, which suffered like so many others. When Layla's father died, her mother came down with all kinds of health problems. She'd been an active woman and pretty, flitting through life with her svelte 50-something body. Then her husband passed away and she began to suffer from high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney disease, and hypothyroidism. She became a limp, bedridden thing. Layla's divorcee sister and her 2-year-old daughter lived with them. There was also a brother, but he had lost his mind years earlier. What had happened was that at the age of 21, he fell in love with a student at the College of Fine Arts. That's where I'd studied too. The girl he admired was the daughter of a low-ranking officer from the Meze 86 neighborhood. One day, another boy, whose father was an intelligence officer, happened to see this same girl at college. Layla didn't tell me which agency the father worked for, that part wasn't important. The point was that the boy fell for her too, and wanted to take her on a date to his father's rest stop. That's what kids of government officials call the gardens on the edge of Damascus, reserved for high-ranking officers. Somewhere they can go in their free time and spend days off with their families. She turned him down. By this point, she and Layla's brother were dating. Then, one morning, Layla's brother was kidnapped in the street. He disappeared for a whole week and returned an empty shell. They hung him from his feet for days, left him upside down until his mind poured out to the last drop, she told me. I remember the phrase too well. Layla told me all this one time when no one was in the waiting room except us. She said her brother came back without his mind. From then on, he shut himself in his room. He'd sit next to the open window, looking out onto the crowded street in Masakan Barze, and yelling at people. "Have you seen Hafez al-Assad?" he'd ask them. "If you see him, tell him I won't leave my room until he comes to visit in person." No one paid any attention. Crazy. Lost his mind. He'd urinate out the window and point his penis directly at whoever was passing, oblivious to their insults or swearing. Layla spent her days in that tiny waiting room, around people not dissimilar to her brother in one way or another. They had stories just as strange as his. She studied, scheduled appointments, drank Nescafe with milk, and smoked voraciously. Then she went home to care for her weak, bedridden mother, her divorced only sister, her niece, and her brother, who was a prisoner to his room and his madness. I often watched Layla and considered her sweet disposition, which radiated from her eyes despite everything around her. I imagined how hard it must be for someone to act as mother, father, doctor, and husband, and keep it all together. You'd think that their expression would show the strain of what they have to carry, crushed one minute, resilient the next, that their eyes might glaze over callously, then glow with sudden tenderness. But not Layla. I sat scanning each of the people in the waiting room. A young man in his early 30s arrived, tall, broad shoulders, strong features as if they had been drawn or even sculpted on his face. Thick hair, jet black. He had a broad chest and I envied him his ribcage, that it could expand to hold so much air. I didn't feel real jealousy then, not in that first brief encounter. That feeling wouldn't come until we'd got to know each other better. You see, I was desperately afraid of suffocating, terrified by the thought of the air around me running out. Unable to take in any more, I'd die of asphyxiation while this man watched and took deep breaths to fill his own lungs, which were more spacious than those of ordinary people. Our rib cages have atrophied. Even at their best, they arch no further than our stomachs.